It's a report funded by the Center for Disease Control saying that 3% of people in Washington, D.C. have HIV. That's three times the level considered an epidemic. Now, activists and public health officials have tried promoting safer sex and other interventions to stop the spread of AIDS for two decades now. So why aren't we closer to ending the epidemic? We've got Daniel Halperin of the Harvard University School of Public Health with us today. Daniel, you've been tracking HIV prevention. What's going on here?
Well, it's a little bit of a complicated story, actually, and I didn't hear your segment yesterday, although I've heard some of the ones on the media recently. Look, the HIV epidemic in Washington, D.C. is definitely a bad one, and it's much, much worse than almost anywhere else in the United States. Of course, it's similarly bad in some other large cities. But this, it's not necessarily worse than it's been. And without going into all the complicated statistical reasons.
Yeah, we did hear that it could be better tracking. But do you think that in general, even if there's a large margin of error that we're talking about, that people are either ignoring or not getting public health messages, or simply, you know, we discussed here in the office the other day, is it just so hard for us to change our behavior? How do you factor in all those things?
I think it's a combination of things. First of all, just to get it out of the way, yes, it's better tracking, but also when I've been looking at the data from D.C., a couple of things have struck me. Now, most of my work over the last 15 years has been in Africa and other developing regions. I do follow the U.S. epidemic to some extent, but I'm not really an expert on the U.S. epidemic. But I know comparisons are being made to Africa, to the epidemics in Africa. And it's really very different in many ways than the epidemics in Africa. There are some similarities that are actually quite interesting. But one big difference is that, according to the report, which was just released yesterday, it says that over 70% of people with HIV in Washington, D.C. are over the age of 40. So it is not at all a youth epidemic. And what I read into that is that a lot of the reason that the prevalence of HIV may have gone up somewhat in D.C. is actually, believe it or not, a representation of success. What do I mean by that? What I mean is that a lot of people have been placed on antiretroviral medications now. So what you get essentially is a situation where you have a lot of people that years ago would be dead now. People, after about 10 years, most people are dead if they had HIV infection at least 10 years ago. These people are still alive. So that's a good thing. People who would have been dead otherwise are alive because of these medications. But what that will tend to do statistically over time is raise the level of prevalence because you have more and more people who have the virus who are still living, and then, of course, new people getting infected. And when you add that all up, the epidemic seems to be going up. So I just thought I'd mention that. But to get to your question, it's a combination of reasons. One problem that we've had in the United States, and we've seen this in San Francisco, where I'm originally from, and we've seen this in many parts of the United States, Europe, and Australia, is that as antiretroviral medications have become available over the last 13 years, which is a wonderful life-saving boon, it's had this unintended negative consequence in terms of behavior change, which is that until antiretrovirals came along, AIDS was literally a death sentence. If you got HIV, people understood that you basically would end up dying, and there was a terrible amount of fear, by many people at least, of getting the disease. And so we did have a lot of behavior change. In San Francisco, in the early 80s, when HIV was first, you know, realized that this virus was living among the population, there was really a huge amount of behavior change that happened rather quickly, and it wasn't mainly even due to official programs. It was due to people in the community just saying, oh, my God, we really have to change or we're going to be the next victim. But unfortunately, we've seen to some degree an unraveling of that behavior change since the availability of antiretrovirals has come. It's an inadvertent, unintended consequence where AIDS isn't really necessarily a death sentence anymore. You can potentially live many years if you take the medications, and so some young gay men in the United States, for example, kind of, first of all, they don't know people who died of AIDS. It's a sort of new generation. It's unlike the people 25 years ago where everybody knew somebody who had been devastated by this disease. Young people, they don't have that experience, so there's less fear because of that. And also, there's a sense of, well, if I get it, I can take the medications. So this is not the only reason, but it's part of the reason that we're finding it difficult to either change behavior or even we're seeing worsening of behavior due to this kind of a situation. Now, in a place like D.C., you compound that with a very terrible inner-city poverty. that's related to drug addiction and lots of other issues. I mean, so there's all a combination of factors going on there.
Well, Daniel, it's great to get your perspective on this. Thank you so much.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.